Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everyone. It's hour two. Toker Talk Radio is in effect. Although our phone line is down, we have lost our 971-533-7111 phone line. Now I got to get a new phone line. So bear with me while we get that taken care of. Also, the RadicalRust.com website is down. Well, it's not down. It's up right now, but it's frozen in 2012. I got to get the new RadicalRust.com site taken care of sometime these next couple of weeks as well. And having a meeting with my IT guy tonight, so we'll see what happens with respect to that. But I'm hoping we'll have something for you in a couple weeks here. Want to get the RadicalRust.com VIP system up. And yes, if you were a 420 Radio VIP, you will be transferred over to being a RadicalRust.com VIP. Also, quick shout out before we get back to the Canadian All-Star Activism Panel with Mark and Jody Emery, Sensible BC's Dana Larson, Professor Mark Hayden, and lawyer Kirk Tusaw, that's moderated by Jamie Shaw. I wanted to make a quick note of this piece by Christopher Ingram in the Washington Post. One striking chart shows why pharma companies are fighting legal marijuana, and it refers to some data that we reported earlier. A new study that's been released in the journal Health Affairs finds that where medical marijuana is legal, prescriptions for the drugs medical marijuana can replace go down. So this was from 17 states that had medical marijuana as of 2013. They found in medical marijuana states, the average doctor prescribed 265 fewer doses of antidepressants, 486 fewer doses of seizure medications, 541 fewer anti-nausea doses, 562 fewer doses of anti-anxiety medication. But the most striking difference was 1,826 fewer doses of painkillers in any given year. So drugs for spasticity, depression, sleep disorders, seizures, psychosis, nausea, anxiety, and most of all pain, all decreased in the 17 states that had medical marijuana. Now, there was actually one surprising piece of information from this study, and that was in states that had medical marijuana, there turned out to be more doses for glaucoma medication. And that seems odd because glaucoma is something that we often recommend medical marijuana for, but compared to some of the other glaucoma drugs that are out there now, it's not as effective. You have to smoke pot all day, every day to get the relief, and some people don't want to do that. So there are new medications, some eye drops and such, that actually do a better job than cannabis does. So there's some theory here that the people that try medical marijuana for their glaucoma get some relief, but they realize it's short-lived, and so they go to their doctor looking for something better. So that's the theory there. But they also wanted to compare this, you know, well, maybe medical marijuana, maybe all drugs went down.
So they took a look at other drugs, things like blood thinners, antiviral drugs, antibiotics, drugs that you wouldn't replace with medical marijuana, and they found no difference. No change in the prescribing patterns for the drugs that medical marijuana does not replace. In the news release, the lead author of the study, Ashley Bradford, said, "The results suggest people are really using marijuana as medicine and not just using it for recreational purposes," end quote. Well, you know, the pharmaceutical companies don't like it when doctors are recommending 1,800 fewer painkillers every year. We got some Canadian activism coming up right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
You're going
to
be a
great-granddad.
Pretty cool.
Morgan is Ray Dawn's son. Morgan and his wife, Tracy, they've been trying to have a baby for quite some time. Did you hear what I said to Morgan?
What?
Do you know who the father is?
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
Just before we get into like more fuller discussion points, I'd like to a few words from Dana, who actually I feel kind of has bridged this gap fairly well. He's stayed very relevant as an activist. Movements like Overgrow Canada really keep up with the changing game board. And what do you think is next? How can activists keep evolving at this stage where we're in this kind of in-between period?
Well, that's why I started giving away the seeds, I guess, because I feel like growing is the final frontier of what we want, everybody to be able to grow their own. And this has been a 20-year civil disobedience campaign. You know, Mark really launched it with the information and the literature and bongs and then seeds, and the dispensaries have picked it up, and that's been a huge area of growth. And, you know, a lot of dispensaries are not really so medical anymore, just selling to everybody, which I think is very good. But people still can't grow openly, right? And that's still the thing that's not really allowed yet. And so I thought giving away seeds to encourage everybody to grow was kind of the next phase in that. And I don't really know where you go beyond that. I mean, other than sort of pushing, all the things that we've got, we need to push to have more and more. But if everybody can grow their own, and if we've got independently run dispensaries selling cannabis to people, and if we've got access to vapor lounges and bong shops and information, that's kind of what we want, really, in terms of what our culture, you know, what we want to have available. So I don't really know where to go beyond that, other than actually changing the law. You know, the civil disobedience campaign is great, but we're still living under Harper's laws. And in fact, in terms of changing the laws in Canada so far, our movement has been terrible. The laws have only gotten worse over the last 20 years. But the enforcement of those laws, the reality on the ground, public opinion, court decisions, and every other way, it's been great. But the laws that Parliament passes have not gotten any better yet. Hopefully we got a good one coming down the pipe, right? So that's how I see it, and I feel our campaign is going to have to continue, and whatever they put in is not going to be good enough, right? Legalization 1.0 is going to be better than prohibition, but not a lot, and we're going to have to keep pushing, and whatever parts in there we don't like, we got to keep breaking those laws and keep doing it until we get to legalization version 7 or 8, where we start getting the kind of system that we're actually looking for, right? So that's how I see it. It'll be an ongoing campaign for a long time. And civil disobedience certainly isn't the only part, but it's a key aspect. But it takes all these things, you know, political work, civil disobedience, public opinion, working at all levels of government and all different parts. So all these things come together to make change. But civil disobedience, I think, is a big driver in terms of if everyone's already breaking the law and nobody cares anymore, it's pretty easy to change the law at that point because everybody already thinks it's done, right? So that's how I see it.
That's true. Yeah, thank you. This is, of course, yeah, this is, of course, what's also leading to tension right now because we've been told we're going to be legalized. We've been told that it's going to be based on best evidence and on public health. But what we've really been hearing back in terms of what they have considered best evidence in public health hasn't really been overly reassuring. Mark, did you have comments on what Dana had said?
Sure. Version one is cannabis. I'd like to speculate as to what version two is. I'm taking off my public health hat for a second. I'm putting on my MAPS hat, which is the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. Cannabis is first, psychedelics are second. And quite frankly, heroin and cocaine are third and fourth. You know, all currently illegal drugs need to be part of this. Cannabis just opened... Yes, cannabis is a gateway drug.
Yes.
It's a gateway to legalization. That's the gateway. And so we need to continue the process. The beginning is cannabis.
Nice, yeah, and that's something that AC Braddock had mentioned in one of the panels yesterday that has always been what my thought about cannabis was, is that it was the plant that was not going to fit in the box no matter how hard they tried to put it in that box, and once they realized it doesn't fit in that box, maybe other plants don't fit in that box as well. Dana, do you have a...
Well, I would just say I think it's going to be the same path where I think medicalization of psychedelics will be the thing, right? It's easy to say no to some kid who wants to take it on the weekend, but a veteran who's got PTSD and he needs MDMA, it's a lot harder to say no to them. Yeah. And then just like with cannabis, you start realizing, well, if it's good for the person who's sick, it's also good to help prevent those kind of things. It's also maybe good for regular people to use in the right context as a preventative or as a, you know, whatever, right? There's lots of studies showing that, you know, magic mushrooms, even a single experience, can change your whole life outlook in very positive ways. So I think we'll see the same kind of, the vulnerable groups that are hard to say no to will be in the front, and that will kind of normalize these things for other people. And then we see, well, it's good for everybody, really, right? So,
yeah, nice. Kirk, I just wanted to get back a little bit to home growing within legalization. The deadline's coming in fairly soon for when we're supposed to see some sort of draft around the medical. So do you think they're going to try and tackle like a medical patients are allowed to grow first and then maybe include that into legalization?
Well, I certainly the Allard ruling requires the government to address the constitutional deficiencies of the MMPR by the 24th of August. Now, that clock's ticking relatively quickly. It does not appear from an outsider's perspective that the government has made substantial progress towards a new regime. I suspect that they're not entirely sure what to do. And I suspect largely the reason they're not entirely sure what to do is that Justice Phelan kept jurisdiction and kept the injunction alive that protects so many patients, former MMAR patients and producers, and said essentially that the injunction lives until further order of the court. Now, as a practical matter, what does that mean? In the past, when the government has responded to declarations of constitutional invalidity, they've moved inches rather than miles. They've taken very incremental steps towards constitutionality. I've argued in court unsuccessfully, but will continue to argue, that those responses have been contemptuous of the decisions of the courts. In effect, they've thumbed their noses at the ongoing constitutional dialogue between the courts and the legislature in a charter-based democracy by taking these tiny little steps. The difficulty is I think they'd like to take a tiny little step in response to Allard. I think they'd like to implement some kind of like five-plant hard cap on medical producers if you have a permit from your doctor. And then just revitalize the MMPR as the commercial distribution avenue, perhaps with some retail component through pharmacies or the like included. The difficulty with that approach is they're not going to get rid of the injunction by doing that. We've educated Justice Phelan enough that he understands that if you can't justify any prohibition on home production in the context of a lengthy charter trial with tons of expert witnesses, the entire resources of the government of Canada at your disposal, bringing in experts from all over the world if you're the government of Canada, and you can't even justify the restrictions on all of our plaintiffs, by the way, all of whom could produce in excess of 100 plants each, It's going to be very difficult to go before that justice again and say, well, we fixed it, Judge. People can all grow five plants now, because the arbitrariness problem remains. It is just as safe or unsafe to grow five plants, 50 plants, 500 plants, 5,000 plants. It just depends on how you're doing it. And so I think there's a big problem there, and I don't think the government has figured out how they're going to address that problem. I can tell you that John and I and the other lawyers involved in Allard are prepared to go back to court if we need to continue to fight this battle that we've been fighting for many, many, many years in the courts. I desperately hope we don't have to do that. It is difficult. It is arduous. It is tough for the witnesses. It is tough for the lawyers. It's tough for all the people out there that don't have any ability to control the outcome of the events, and yet their very lives depend on what those outcomes are. And so the government has a real opportunity here. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why they're not simply just thinking about bringing back the MMAR for personal production and caregiver production and having the MMPR with some tweaks be the commercial distribution system. It needs a lot of tweaks, but that's beyond the scope of this panel. That seems to me to be the easiest short-term solution whilst you figure out the rest of it. But I have no idea what's in their heads, and I fear to speculate.
Yeah, fair enough. One of the big issues with diversion, of course, is why they're worried about plant numbers, and they're talking about loss of revenue, but they're also talking about access to youth, which touches on what I was talking about earlier about the public health. Right now, our colleges consider 25 to be youth. So in any sort of legal rec market, it wouldn't be anyone under 25 wouldn't actually be legal. Mark Hayden, you had some comments you wanted to make on that.
Well, the issue of access to youth, I think, is the most controversial. And there's essentially two positions out there, and I'd like to fill in the middle ground. The position of Justin Trudeau is it's a nasty drug, and if youth get a hold of it, it'll damage their brains. The position of David Malmo-Levine is it's the same as caffeine, treat it the same as caffeine. So those are two relatively divergent points of view. I've put a lot of thought into the middle ground, and I'd like to just throw out some ideas here. My position on access to youth really comes from a paper I've just finished writing on psychedelics and a post-prohibition regulatory model for psychedelics in a world of public health. And we looked at various pieces of the puzzle. Piece of the puzzle number one is there's 23 states out there that allow parents to supervise their children's alcohol consumption. Piece of the puzzle number two is ayahuasqueros and peyote traditions have always allowed youth access so long as there's parental approval, but not parental supervision. The issue of health access, if you think about the difference, how we as a province, how young people access health services, I think is relevant, because youth are divided into mature and immature minors. Mature minors being defined as those who can make their own decisions and understand what they're asking for, and immature minors being defined as those who can't. All of those examples that I've just given essentially are guided by adults. Guided by adults in some kind of ceremonial context, or some kind of context, which is sometimes ceremonial. My observation is my interest in drugs is historical and cross-cultural. And if I look at all drug use throughout the history of mankind, and I look at all drug use around the planet today, largely benign use of drug that's integrated into cultural uses is supervised by adults in some kind of cultural context. And so at the end of the day, I took all of those pieces of the puzzle and wove it into this paper, basically saying, yes, youth should be able to access it, but they should be able to access cannabis with some kind of context that really we as a society haven't figured out yet. And we need to have a larger discussion of it, and it probably needs to have some guidance by elders. I find it interesting, I'm slightly off my public health hat for a second, to observe the number of people who are participating in green ceremonies now. The existence of the ayahuasqueros, who have come widely throughout North America, have raised an awareness of the issue of ceremonial structures around drug use. And that's spinning off for people who are now doing green ceremonies. In fact, there are a number of people in this room who are participating or running green ceremonies and bringing a spiritual and healing tradition to a cannabis process. I find that absolutely fascinating. Personally, I think that's the discussion that we need to be having.
Thank you. I think we're a little bit over time already, so we should probably move to some questions, because I imagine there will be some. I just wanted to add very, very quickly.
Is it getting chilly in here, or are you wearing an anatomically correct bra?
It's 420 here in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon, and we'll get back to the question and answer segment of the All-Star Canadian Marijuana Activism Panel. When we return from break, we've got a safety meeting we've got to get to. Also, looking forward to the next couple of days of shows. We got Cops Say Legalized Drugs coming up tomorrow, and Friday we may be speaking with Mary Lou Burton from the Oregon Cannabis Fair, so stay tuned.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I also believe we need a fence. The problem is if El Chapo builds a tunnel under the fence, we have to be able to deal with that too.
Okay. Maybe you're high too.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a Resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We go back to the All-Star Canadian Marijuana Activism Panel, moderated by Jamie Shaw, featuring Mark and Jody Emery, Dana Larson from Sensible BC, Mark Hayden from MAPS, and lawyer Kirk Tusaw. We bring you back now during the question and answer session at the panel.
Interesting. One of the things for me that I find is missing from most of these discussions is we've apologized for historical wrongs in other areas. We've apologized for the Comegada Maru. We've apologized for the head tax. We've apologized for residential schools. And yet we're still ignoring the knowledge and approach that the elders in these societies had towards these drugs. So that's really resonant with me in particular when you speak of that, Mark.
Okay, one quick statement, one quick question. The quick statement is, I think you mischaracterized what I say. I never say that cannabis and caffeine are the same. I say caffeine's more risky, dangerous in three categories. Cannabis is more risky in one. Caffeine is more risky in overdose deaths, overuse deaths, and withdrawal symptoms. Cannabis has higher impairment levels of novice users, which could justify some restrictions that don't apply to coffee beans. However, I do think we have to be realistic about the amount of obedience that teenagers display, which is zero. zero obedience. They're going to use it anyway. Do we want them using it with safe point of sale and quality control, or do we want them buying off the black market from Buddy, who also is selling coke and heroin? That's really the only question we have to decide about that. And I think, would you have a problem, Mark Hayden, with a system that had 16 and over, like the Senate report recommended, buy on their own, 15 and under with parental and physician supervision also have access? Would you have any problem with that?
This feels a bit like deja vu. I keep having the same conversation with you, David. Yes.
If you're going to mischaracterize my statement, I'm going to put you on the spot as punishment.
I stand corrected about your position on caffeine. Okay. So I have no problem with cannabis being made available, but the issue, again, is a ranked system. So cannabis should be more available than alcohol, and alcohol should be more available than tobacco. So a ranked system makes complete sense to me. And then I throw psychedelics in the mix, and I think some kind of supervision is required, essentially.
Where does processed food and sugar fit into that ranking system?
And there's chocolate. Let's talk about the damages and health risks of chocolate.
All caffeine. We let kids have caffeine anymore, too, without any limits.
Can I chime in?
Yeah.
There's also another point to be sort of elucidated from the discussion, right? Because we talk about access. Teenagers have access to cannabis. When we're talking about access, we're talking about access through a legal avenue of access, right? And so I think that there's a big difference between a system in which no young person can be arrested or saddled with a criminal record arising from their use of cannabis, and a system which also then subjects young people to the influences and vagaries of capitalism as consumers being convinced that they should buy and consume more and more and more of a product that is making money for the people producing and selling it. And John Conroy and I actually had a fairly pitched argument in front of Bill Blair about this, at the end of which I sort of looked at Mr. Blair and I said, you must have thought I was the radical one first, but I'm not as crazy as Conroy. Because he favored a system where 16-year-olds could go into a store and purchase cannabis. And I said, no, I don't happen to favor that system. I happen to favor a system in which no young person or any other Canadian can face criminal consequences for accessing cannabis. But I think the decision and whether a 16 or 17 or person under the age of majority should be able to have access to it, legal access to it, is a decision that has to flow through a parent or other supervisory authority, not through a profit-motivated shopkeeper. Because at the end of the day, when cannabis is legal and becomes a commodity like everything else, it's going to be marketed, sold, and it's going to be, something that puts money in people's pockets, and therefore there's a real incentive to get you to buy as much of it as possible. Anheuser-Busch spends $1 billion every year to try to sell alcohol just in North America.
The same is true for caffeine. Would you favor age limits on coffee purchases?
Well, I think I'd favor parental restrictions on accessing highly potent caffeinated substances. But, caffeine, I appreciate your nuanced distinction between the risks of caffeine and cannabis, and thank you for explaining that because it helped clarify my thinking on your position as well. But the impairment piece is pretty strong, and by definition, most youth are novice users. So I think there's a pretty fundamental difference there that it's hard to get it over when you're talking about age limits. So
I do think there's also a point that we're kind of glossing over that's actually is the point. How many people in this room had alcohol before they were of the legal age of majority?
Everybody.
How many of you had cannabis before it was legal?
All right.
I actually turned, I became age of majority in Alberta when I turned 18, and then I moved to Ontario before I was 19. So I became illegal again. And then I went to school in the United States where I was illegal a third time for a whole year. So there's a ridiculousness to this. I think you wanted to say a little bit more on the...
It's interesting to look at how youth use changes with legalization. So it's interesting, the Dutch youth use cannabis at about 50% of the American youth, and they've done that for 30 years. It's very low. And now that the states are legalizing cannabis, youth in the states where it's becoming legalized, youth is going down.
Yeah?
Something just came to mind I've never thought of before, but how old are young teens when they start babysitting? I think you can start babysitting when you're about 12, 13, 14. Yeah. And, you know, you're responsible for another living being who's often a baby or a child. So is the concern about kids and cannabis or young people, I mean, that bothers me too. What's a young person? What's a teen? What's a kid? You know, if 19-year-olds are kids, then, you know, we're twisting up our language here. But if a young person is responsible enough to be home alone or to babysit or to have a newspaper route of their own, are they then responsible enough to decide whether or how to use cannabis? And I haven't thought about that before, but I was 12 years old when I was taking care of somebody's kid, and I guess I was responsible enough at that time. So I don't even know. This is just amusing that came to mind. So. Yeah.
I have one quick thought about age limits is that they don't need to be the same for all cannabis products, right? A cream or a salve should be available to anybody. CBD products that don't get you high, there should be no age limits for that at all. Yeah. And, you know, and maybe even, and on the other hand, maybe like a super concentrated psychedelic dose of cannabis should be a higher age limit than being able to smoke a joint or something, something that can really, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing graduated things like that with a lot of stuff. It's the dosage and the potency that affects it more than the substance itself. So a lot of cannabis stuff, I think, should have no age limits at all.
Absolutely. And so, Mark, you just had a question. What exactly was your thought around that? Because it does tie into age limits, absolutely. But
one of the issues is that's being floated by the federal government is should cannabis be available in liquor stores? And the public health analysis of that is actually quite straightforward, is that, yes, if it replaces alcohol, because alcohol is more harmful both individually and from a community and family point of view, and no, if it increases the use of alcohol. And we actually don't know yet. There is some evidence coming out of the initial legalization experiences in the state saying that alcohol use goes down, which is actually a good thing when cannabis becomes legalized. But if we want to find out in Canada, what we do is we take four stores in two different provinces, two are urban, two rural, that have established track records in terms of the sale of alcohol, and then we sell cannabis in them, and then we see, does alcohol use go down with that experiment? And if it does, then yes, we should sell it in liquor stores, including the dispensaries. And if alcohol use goes up, we shouldn't sell it in liquor stores. And if it stays the same, then it's a political choice.
Also, if it causes people to combine them together more, that would also be a factor, right?
Absolutely.
Because even if they're not drinking, you know, if they're mixing them together more often, I'd say that's also probably a negative.
And Denmark is specifically using cannabis in programs to get people off of alcohol. So yeah, there's that issue as well. And I know people that have just done that naturally. They just stop drinking alcohol when they start smoking.
And so do you think that might be why the liquor control boards want to sell marijuana? Because they're thinking, well, first of all, some people might choose pot over booze, but maybe it's also a way to sell more booze. I don't know. We don't know how it would happen. But if they're bringing people in to buy weed, and clearly with the supply and demand being demonstrated by dispensaries, a lot of people demand access. Well, and so if they go to a booze store to get their weed, maybe they'll be tempted by that picture of Captain Rum or whoever he is, you know?
They'll be selling infused alcohol pretty quick, right? You'll have infused alcohol with cannabis together combined into one thing, which
could cause
fine,
problems
not,
too,
yeah,
even.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're just still experimenting or still getting used to either one of the two substances, right? Did you have a question?
Noctis, if I can write out.
Green fairy?
No.
One of the older Central American civilizations is known as the Toltecs, and there's at least one tribe that continues with the old ways. Once a year, the elders, they climb up their holy mountain, and they take heavy doses of peyote, and they base their plans for the coming year on the insights they receive from those experiences. However, they throughout the entire year, they take light doses, and they also give light doses to their children on a regular basis throughout the year. And this is a really good example of how cultural prejudices about drug use can be based much more, or I should say attitude towards drug use can be have far more to do with cultural prejudices rather than the actual effects of the drug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ayahuasca traditions question? Also involve infants, actually prenatal infants, children, and at all ages. All ages, people are involved with ayahuasca ceremonies.
Wow.
You know, the problem is in my mind has never really been with use. It's the same thing that Kirk was kind of mentioning earlier. It's why we need regulations. It's got nothing to do with the plant. It's once you allow somebody to make money off of it, it's people that are the problem. It's not the plant. And it's the same thing with drugs. What we find, if there's people that have certain attitudes toward drugs, certain cultures that don't have the same problems that other ones do. So trying to find that merge and that meld is really the tricky part.
I think that's a very important point made on this Canadian activism panel, and it refers back to something that folks at Normal have always called set and setting, understanding how and why you're using a particular substance and what are the ceremonies and understandings and the respect that you give that substance. Drugs in and of themselves are neither good nor bad. It is how we have our relationships with them and how we control their markets. Those are where the problems can exist. And of course, some of these psychedelic drugs have to be treated with a great deal of respect. They're very powerful. They open you up to all sorts of truths and realities you may not be ready for. Make sure you got a babysitter.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry. Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina. Candid.
I want to give you the inside story.
Captivating.
I want to introduce you to my kind and amazingly talented friends.
Compelling.
We get to meet some of the most amazing cannabis activists and warriors around.
Listen in as medical marijuana pioneer Dr. Dina shares never-before-heard stories, chats with cannabis insiders and celebrity friends, and provides invaluable perspective and insight into one of the fastest-growing industries in the world.
I want to share with you what was once confidential information. Let's expose the truth, discuss the issues, and learn the facts.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabat since 2012.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, SoundCloud, Snapchat, LinkedIn, and Boise State University's 2400 baud modem bulletin board system from 1985. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Final segment of the show today and wrapping up this Canadian All-Star Activism Panel, moderated by Jamie Shaw and featuring Mark and Jody Emery from Cannabis Culture, Dana Larson from Compassionate BC, Mark Hayden from MAPS, and attorney Kirk Tusaw. They continue their discussion, and they're getting into the questions and answer segment. Also, don't forget to stay tuned after this segment for the Stoner Jesus Show, coming to you live here on CannabisRadio.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
J-Mac.
Hi.
I'm really high, sorry. Hi, Gina from Pot TV. My question is to Mark, Mark Hedden. And in regard to the access to marijuana in a liquor store, can I please have two reasons why you think you do? And may I offer you my reason why you can't?
So why?
So I think you asked, why should cannabis be available in liquor stores? Well, I actually didn't say it should be. What I said is we don't know.
No, I heard you say you want to do it in two communities, two stores, one world, one country, which is good. But I want to know why you want to do it in a liquor store and only two stores.
Well, the question is, the observation is cannabis is less harmful than alcohol. Alcohol is more harmful physically to the human body, and it's also more harm socially and families. So if cannabis replaces alcohol, that's a good thing.
My question was, why do you think it is good reason to sell cannabis in a liquor store? I'm not asking why you want that. I want to know why you think it should be sold in a liquor store. Because my opinion why it should not be put in a liquor store, for one reason, is because if somebody goes there who buys beer and weed, and they get in an accident because they smoke a joint and drink beer, how are they going to accuse? What are they going to say? They're going to be like, cannabis killed this guy. When it wasn't cannabis, it would be the alcohol, not the cannabis.
He's worried about mixing cannabis and alcohol together.
That will happen.
Actually should be sold in a liquor store. He was just saying if it actually turns out that it'll like reduce alcohol, then it might be a good idea. But he wasn't actually saying, hey,
what you're asking is a research question. The research question is, what is the relationship to cannabis sales and liquor sales? And we actually don't know yet.
I don't want to know what the difference is. I just want to know why you want to do it. Because it's me. Well,
I would want to do it if it replaces alcohol.
Yeah, it would.
Because alcohol is more harmful.
But then if it replaces alcohol, then wouldn't it become a dispensary back to square one?
That actually is one of the things that muddles this entire argument, actually, is because when they say put it in the liquor stores, do they actually mean put it in the liquor stores, or do they mean put it under the liquor board? We heard from one of the unions, for example, that you could apply for a private liquor store license, and then nothing in that license tells you you have to sell liquor. So they were looking at people being able to sell one or the other or both and thinking that it might just sort of work in there. And then you've got the LCBO model, and in Manitoba, where they're pushing a slightly different idea of it actually being in the liquor stores for sure. And that's not what we've seen anywhere else. Even in Washington, where it went under the liquor board, that's not called the liquor board anymore. It's now called the Liquor and Cannabis Board. And they're two separate stores that are just kind of overseen by the same regulatory body. So there's a lot of questions in those proposals about what exactly they even mean.
One of the arguments brought up for Washington State, especially, was that they wanted to save money by using a pre-existing bureaucracy rather than creating a whole new one. So they said, well, the alcohol distribution model already exists in Washington, so instead of duplicating this entire system with all the employees and all that you'll need, why not just put it all in that same group? But of course, as with any decision, there's consequences and negatives and positives. So I think that was a selling idea for the people. That, you know, it saves money, it reduces bureaucracy, and so I think that was one of the benefits of a liquor distribution model. But clearly, the underground market still exists in Washington, because any overregulation will lead to the continuation of the underground market.
Well, and their big mistake is the one that it looks like we're going to be making as well, where we don't bother fixing any of the problems or issues with our medical side. We just kind of move ahead with recreation and maybe end up throwing the recreational, the medical right under the bus. That's what's going on in Washington right now. So Sad to see.
Okay, thank you, Jordy Inman, for giving me a clear answer. Thank you.
Oh, of course.
Thanks, J-Mac.
I really hate to cut this incredible panel short. I think we could really have a longer discussion. It's wonderful to have the experts come out here and get in a kind of roundtable, problem-solving way, and just kind of clarify some things that we need to understand before going forward. I really want to thank every single one of our panelists that's here and for all your hard work, especially the activists who, you know, from the beginning have paved the way for us. Really, it wouldn't have been the same without all of their hard work, their commitment, and their heart. I also want to thank Jamie for all her support and being an incredible moderator. Thank you. Thank you. So just a few words before we kind of close the container of this incredible 2 days. So inspirational and so exciting and so informative to be with all of you here. I opened up this speech with a wise, so it was it was reverence, so honoring the plant, and that's, I think we really, really did that. We all joined together and we, you know, put her in a new light, and that's what the community definitely needs to see. And the second thing, of course, was community, compassion, and unity, and it was so beautiful to see all of you connecting from heart space in a positive way with each other. I hope that that will continue as we go forward. It was really, like, the feedback that we got, Jay and the Cambridge team, house, such an incredible job, again, for putting this event on. Yeah, thank you. The two feedback that we got was no longer why are we doing this? It was when and where are we going to do this again? And so continuing that conversation forward with at least once a year for us to come back together, ground in, and have a community update about what's going on so we're all in the know. The last reason of why I felt like we were here, of course, is the responsibility and stewardship for our planet, and that was also really taken care of. I loved what anandamide represents for us right now. That was the endogenous cannabinoid neurotransmitter that was discovered by Dr. Hanus, and it's all about bliss and balance. So as long as we take that away from this conference, staying in your bliss, staying in your balance, in the equilibrium of your internal state, we can project that out into our world and be able to create the internal world outwards. So I really invite all of us to commit to that. Now, before I finish, just a few thank yous as well. So of course, we wouldn't have been able to do this event without our sponsors and the exhibitors. The exhibitors are conscious community, conscious business, and they help support the platform for education and also engagement. So thank you so much to each and every single exhibitor that came and invested that time, invested that, as Jody said, the currency that allows us to be able to keep doing this advocacy work and forward movement. I also want to thank Crop King Seeds, Kyle and his team, for their incredible support as our top sponsor. Namaste Vapors, thank you so much. Cannabis Growers of Canada, as well as the online dispensary, they were together in the sponsorship. Want to thank Moda, MJ Freeway, Canutra, as well as, of course, I forgot to mention these two friends, Mike and Carmel. Carmel's in the middle sitting there. They just so generously gave their time as far as our social media, just getting our ads out. They didn't ask for anything, and I really just want to appreciate your support and help in that, definitely. Thank you. Some logistics also, just a few things. Please return anything that you found, including cell phones, just up here. Just pass it to me. I'll make sure that we put it online so people can get it. Please give us some feedback. This is the People's Plant, the People's Conference. So whatever you guys feel that we need to improve on, maybe next year we got to close off the space because it was incredible what was happening here. There was so much magic. I also want to reiterate that the CBD Project, Martin A. Lee, who's one of our esteemed speakers here, he's giving 2 hours of his time for free to the community. So write this down. It's the Waterfall Gallery at Granville Island. Beautiful art gallery where he's going to be speaking tomorrow, continuing the CBD talk from 6:30 until 8:30. It's going to be catered with some great food Come out and listen to him. There he is, Martin. Thank you so much for coming all the way from California and continuing that gifting of your time and expertise. Miss D has a really fun night planned for you guys at the Sand, so make sure you guys go and check out the reggae night there tonight, just continuing the good vibes. Yeah, so I also just want to say happy birthday to my partner, Samir, who's right there. Such an incredible light and love in my life. I really wouldn't be able to be so grounded without him. I also want to say happy birthday to Joel, who shares the same birthday. Happy birthday. And I'd like to welcome Quetzaltatl, yes, who she opened up the beautiful ceremony. She's our grizzly mother, you know, protective indigenous support and guidance. And so I'd like to bring her on for the closing prayer as well. And just to let you know, there's already some magic happening regarding the next conference. And I keep saying it's going to be Brazil. And yeah, I really feel the plants are coming together. I feel like ayahuasca and cannabis are coming together. And so mark your calendars, possibly for next August or September. There might be a continuation of this talk. And I already talked to our sponsor, Namaste, and he's like, yeah, definitely, we're situated in Brazil. And I talked to Dr. John Widmar. He's like, yeah, I live some of my time in Brazil. So the magic is already happening. We'll probably also do another community gathering in Victoria. I think that's the next spot that really needs to be illuminated and supported with their community as well. So thank you again to all the panelists who came and said yes and trusted this process. And I hope to see all of you guys next year. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for being part of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, darling. Oh, good.
Great panel there in Canada. My thanks to Mark, Emery, and Dana Larson for having me up there. My first ever event in Vancouver, and I'll be back in October for the International Cannabis Business Conference. Remember, the Stoner Jesus Show is coming up next here on CannabisRadio.com. Stick around for that. We're going to close up shop here when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned.
It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from the SilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
You're going
to
be a
great granddad.
Pretty cool.
Morgan is Ray Dawn's son. Morgan and his wife, Tracy, they've been trying to have a baby for quite some time. Did you hear what I said to Morgan?
What?
Do you know who the father is?
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
We're here with Sir Richard Branson.
Far more damage has been done to people by the current approach.
Jim McMahon.
You know, a lot of the coaches are old school. You know, he used to just yell at us, go, oh, you bunch of pot smokers.
John Popper on the telephone.
You know, I think in the 60s, there was that kind of, the bigotry wasn't so concrete.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 57 after the hour here. Closing things down here on the Russ Belleville Show. The Stoner Jesus Show is coming up next. Stoner Jesus is already in the chat room, ready to forgive your sins and bless your future, so long as you remain stoned. I'm not exactly sure how the theology works. You'll have to ask Stoner Jesus. Coming up next here live on CannabisRadio.com. That's all the time we got for today here on the Russ Belleville Show. Thanks for joining us. Remember, tomorrow we've got our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. We'll be talking to ex-law enforcement officers who recognize the futility of our continued war on drugs. And then on Friday, we hope to have the organizer from the Oregon Fair, who there will actually be cannabis plants displayed at the fair. And we'll learn more about that on Friday's show. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show. The Russ Belleville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.